Attention Sprocket podcast listeners. If you're into bike touring and the bike touring lifestyle and podcasts, go listen to the Pedal Shift Project. Because America. Pedalshift.net.
You are listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.
All right, here comes the show.
All right, here we go.
Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life, and I am not modulating my voice. My name is Brock Dennis.
Hey, you turned into a robot for a little bit there.
And I know. I tripped over one syllable, and I decided to trip over them all.
All this talk about dinosaurs and science. I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland.
Yes, we are.
Nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
The show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today, many things. Lighting.
Yes.
How do you pronounce the bicycling team again?
Komorebi.
Komorebi bicycling team. And let me get this right. Riding fat.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, all of our tires are currently 2.2s. So not bad. Not even 29
not
plus.
Not technically.
No, as it were.
That was technical, though.
Yes, slightly.
Anyway. So we are in the room with Jocelyn Gotti.
Hello.
Of Komorebi Cycling Team.
Yes.
And of PDW.
Mm-hmm.
They're a fine company.
Thank you. Highly
enjoy the products of theirs that I have. And also the KBOO Bike Show. You occasionally make media yourself.
Yes.
So is there anything else that you do that we should know about?
Oh, I do a few other things. I'm on the board for the Friends of Gateway Green.
Oh,
trying to get an urban mountain bike park developed out in the Gatewood neighborhood.
Yeah.
I'm also on the City of Portland Bicycle Advisory Committee, which has been fun to. I guess I've been on for 3 months now. It's been really invaluable to learn kind of the intricacies of bureaucratic work and how that translates to the way I experience my city on my bike every day. So
you keep pretty busy.
Incredibly.
Nice.
That's a good way to be.
Thank you for carving out time.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
Come into the studio.
Thanks for asking.
Really appreciate it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Aaron, guess what I did last Friday?
I heard you were on a boat.
I was. That was on Saturday.
Oh.
On Friday. Well, first of all, on Thursday, I created a Facebook event invite, and I said,
step one.
Yes, I know exactly where you were on Friday.
Well, yeah.
I know the general area of where you were on Friday.
So I said on this Facebook invite, hey, I have a brand new bike sound system. I want to test it out. Who wants to ride with me? And I invited like 300 people, and I thought maybe I'd get four. And it turned out...
You thought, by inviting 300 people, you would get 400?
Yeah, my yield isn't so great. But depending on...
Well, if they told friends, I guess, right?
Right, exactly, yeah. I'm hoping
that's how social media works. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Like three friends and one stranger. But what happened was like 30 people converged upon Putter's Bar and Grill down in Southeast Portland, not too far from where I live.
Yeah.
And we all drank, and then I got on my bike and turned on the sound. And we rode around for like 30 minutes. Well, no, it was longer than that. Like an hour and a half or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
What were you listening to?
Yeah.
I started off with Electric Light Orchestra, Don't Bring Me Down.
Nice.
And then from then on, it was almost all requests. It was there was a lot of early 90s hip hop that people had requested. So that was kind of the flavor of
most
of the...
Did Montel Jordan make a show?
Oh, man.
No. But no? We did have Ice Cube.
Right on.
And who else?
I guess Montel Jordan's probably more R&B than hip-hop.
Yeah. Some of the people that didn't show had requested some songs that I ended up skipping because they weren't there.
Because they weren't there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I thought I was going to be able to like cut all this stuff up and make a playlist kind of with like my music and their music, but then all these requests came in like the day before the event.
Your music took a backseat.
It really did. Well, I was like, you know, the only way people are going to have fun on this bike ride is if they hear songs that they asked for. And so the next time I do this, and I'm going to do it again because Pedalpalooza is coming up.
Uh-huh.
Don't tell anybody. I think I might have to do this event before the actual start of Pedalpalooza, the next one.
It's blasphemy.
I know, because I just don't have the time.
During Pedalpalooza.
You need to go out into the woods.
I do.
Yeah.
Problem with me and Pedalpalooza is that I always say, oh, yeah, this is the year I'm going to go out and do all the rides that sound like so much fun. problem is
and
that
technically,
yes,
you do have the time to do that.
Technically, I do. And yet, that's when Adele and I always choose our summer adventures beginning point, because that's when we get out of work. We both work with the educational system. And so it's, yeah, basically, as soon as work's over, I get on a train, I go into the woods. And so, yeah. And up all the way leading up until that, I've got like two actual rides that I can join.
Right.
Because the rest of them, you know, it's always planning things. I need to block these weeks out on my calendar more carefully.
Well, and I imagine it's hard to stick around for Pedalpalooza when you spent all year or most of the year planning your trips out
true,
into the woods.
True. Well, the cool thing is the Pedalpalooza thing is coming together. People have submitted their events. The deadline, if you're listening to this before May 21st, I want to say, is the print deadline. That's when the Portland Mercury runs off a print version of the schedule.
Ah.
You can carry around in your hip pocket and tell you where to go when.
They'll change, though, quite often.
It's true. Yeah, it happens.
There's, yeah.
Yeah. Always go to shift2bikes.org
that
first.
Is, that is the most updated version.
Yeah.
I think you should plan a Pedalpalooza ride in the woods.
I should.
I would be all about that.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole Camarabbee team. We could go with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So come down to Sacramento then on the 12th of July, and then we'll all go ride bikes.
Awesome. See how it goes.
Yeah. I've been in touch with listener Andy, who lives down in Sacramento, and he's helping us stage ourselves down there.
Yeah.
He's probably going to introduce us to a couple of people as well. So I'm bringing that thing, or maybe the other one. I'm bringing a digital recording device so that we can record interviews with cool people that we meet along the way. So, yeah, Tim Mooney's been kicking our ass as far as going out and talking to people on the road.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. I mean, he's done it like three or four times, which is more than we've.
Well, that's,
you know.
Yeah, that's still more than us.
So, anyways. But all that to say, I have a new bike sound system. It's fantastic. It's really, really nice.
That's awesome. I'm jealous.
And the speakers I found were free, which means you can't turn them up too loud.
Just on the side of the road somewhere? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
do
I'm
they,
thinking,
like, distort then?
They did.
Okay.
They did the other night. Yeah. Oh, what was it? Europe. Not the Final Countdown, but also from the Final Countdown album, Rock the Night.
I don't think I know that one.
Music video features lead singer in a diner singing into a ketchup bottle.
All right.
So, yeah.
That's when you know you've made it.
I know, yeah. So that was another one that came out. But anyways, there will be more of these rides happening. So if anybody listening is in Portland, they can join me. If they're not Facebook friends. I actually met a guy, Lars. Not the Lars that currently donates the show, but another Lars. And he rolled in with us, and now he's listening, I think. So, hi, Lars, if you're there.
Hey.
But,
hi, Lars.
Yeah.
It's a great name.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It is. So, you got something special.
I do. I got a dyno hub.
Yes.
And some lights to go with it. And they have been expertly installed by the good people at Clever Cycles.
Yeah. Internal wiring. For
yes.
At least part of it.
Well, yeah. The rear light, the wire, he punched a hole in my rear rack because it was aluminum. So
gently, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he drilled a hole.
So not gently,
yeah.
But very clean.
But yeah, because it's aluminum, it's not going to rust really. And wired it through the rear rack and then followed the brake line all the way back to the hub.
Yeah.
And it, or up to the hub, I guess. But yeah, it looks really clean. I'm very excited. I have only ridden it in the dark once.
Yeah.
Since.
How is it though?
Oh, great.
I compared, because you used to have two PDW lights on the front
I
of your
bike.
I did
have two PDW lights, and I will say those have been my favorite lights up until this point right now.
Up until you got your dyno hub.
Yes.
So sorry, this isn't working out so well for promotion.
No, that's okay. It's a different animal. I have a dynamo set up on my Pereira well.
So it's okay.
It's totally okay. It's also okay to run with two lights, you know?
That's
when
true.
When I'm in a particularly like hairy situation, I'll just throw my Lars Rover on my handlebar, so I'll have that light closer down to the road to illuminate, and then something higher up to make sure
so,
the cars are
yeah,
paying
exactly.
Attention.
That's how I used to roll generally, is mm-hmm. I have one down on my rack
mm-hmm.
mounted on that to light up the road, and that's a steady, and then one on my handlebars
yeah.
that is blinking to sort of, yeah, attract attention
yeah.
to let people know I'm around. So, yeah, no reason I should.
Yeah. I mean, if you're running lights, it's a good light setup, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Stay visible out there, folks.
Are you thinking about doing any overnight rides at some point?
Well, certainly the Solstice ride.
Okay.
I have both the night of and the next day all free.
Very nice.
And I noticed conspicuously that there are like maybe two Petalpalooza rides after the Solstice ride.
Oh, and you want to go on these?
No.
No. No. Okay.
I mean, nothing against the people who run those rides, but I will be out.
You're going to be up all night and then you go into bed after.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not going to see the light of day next day.
I do like that it's the Solstice ride. So it's like the shortest night of the year. Like if you are going to stay up all night, you might as well be that one.
Yeah. I think it's like 8:30 to 6:30.
Yeah. Yeah. This is awesome.
Yeah. I'm excited for that. And last night was just rolling around town and was really tempted to oh nice. Do you want my bottle opener? Nope.
Nice. I threw the cap across the room, sorry about that.
That's all right. Was really tempted to just like I was coming from Velocult back to the house.
Mm-hmm.
But really tempted to take a much longer scenic route, like through the Springwater corridor, just because
you can,
because I could, and I know like there's sections there that's not lit whatsoever. Yeah.
And now and with your new setup, everything is illuminated.
Everything is illuminated, just like that movie. What's name? I can't remember.
Yeah. Well, we'll think of it eventually. I just opened this Hollows and Fentimans. It's an alcoholic ginger beer, so it's kind of like I'm drinking what you would drink, except
with alcohol.
With booze. Yeah. We got these from our fantastic sponsor, the Beer Mongers.
The Beer Mongers.
Which we asked Andrew when we were over there buying stuff tonight, like, is it busier than usual? And he said, no, this is about average.
People was just kind of.
Yeah, it seems like there's more people there to me. Yeah. But he said, no, it's just steady business. Well, people are always there.
Love those guys.
But you know what? No matter how many people are there, there's always an open seat for you at the Beer Mongers.
Thank you.
You should go on in there. So, yeah. I met up with Eric and Krista.
Oh, yeah.
Both wonderful people, both donors. Eric is doing the Oregon Outback coming up next weekend. Is that it?
This weekend.
Yeah. This is it. Okay.
We leave Thursday. Oh. The big train ride from Portland.
She said
Thursday.
We leave.
And you're
I'm
going also.
Way. Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah.
So Eric is going out. And, of course, Eric is famous for doing the Grilled by Bike thing. And so apparently he's bringing a grilling device and he's going to be hanging out. He's going to be posted up somewhere along the route where you can buy meat and he'll be grilling meat for people who are out there bicycling around. So we sent our audio recorder with him and we're going to get something from that. But I was hanging out with them and they pointed up towards the ceiling. I'd never really looked up at beer mongers before. And tell me if you can name any place in Portland, any adult beverage establishment that has a single piece 20-foot long wooden stick hanging from the ceiling.
I'm afraid of what this single piece 20-foot long wooden stick is. Or
it's
what
just
it's
a
from.
Stick. It's just a long piece of
it's
wood.
It's just a long piece of wood.
Yep. Yep. And it's hanging up there on the ceiling. Apparently it belongs to a regular.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is like the best place for him to store it. So if you want to see huge 20-foot stick.
Is it like a
walking stick?
Presumably.
It's a stick. It's not like a dowel. It's not a board.
Nope. It's a stick.
It's a stick.
Yep. It's nicely like whittled and polished and shined. And it's nice.
Do we know what type of wood it's made out of?
I don't. No. And I don't even know where it comes from. The derivation is a mystery to me, but that stick is at Beer Mongers. Do you want to see that? Go on in there.
I do.
And tell
know.
Them the Sprocket Podcast sent you. So, yeah.
Tell them if you're actually buying something. Don't go in there, like, walk in and look up and then be like,
no, I just came in to see the stick.
By the way, the Sprocket Podcast sent me.
Right.
Peace out, suckers.
Good luck with your business.
Do you know they have a bike team?
They do.
Yeah,
I've heard about this.
Them.
Oh, really?
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
See, full circle.
Okay, so we've got that bicycle team is sponsored by the Beer Mongers and...
I think they are called the Beer
Or
Mongers.
They are the Beer Mongers team. Okay, team. We're going to find out about this because Sean and Terry and somebody else are coming in a couple of weeks.
Great.
Yeah. It's been too long, but we're going to get them in to talk about all kinds of things. Bikes and beer, the
Beers
intersection
and bikes.
Thereof. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyways, thanks again to the Beer Mongers for these beverages.
Yeah.
I'm
going to
try this now because it's
4%
alcohol by volume. Oh, yeah. And you have what?
I'm going to let everybody know this is a new thing for me and for Rogue. Rogue is now making soda, apparently.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the kid in each of us. Look, man, you don't have to be a kid to drink soda.
That's right. Yourself,
anyways,
as an example.
Yeah.
Not a kid.
The ingredients list is pretty interesting, including things like brown sugar and wildflower honey. And sparkling foam.
Nice.
But it has a smell of a real like anise.
Ooh.
Smell to it.
I like anise. I'm a fan. And it's good tasting.
This is all right.
Yeah. excellent.
This is more like a sarsaparilla than a root beer.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
And Jocelyn, what do you have over there?
I have some Freem barrel-aged Flanders-style red ale.
That's some classy stuff right there.
It's delicious. Yeah. I was so stoked that they started bottling their beers recently. This is actually the first Freem that I've had from a bottle, though.
Yeah, They're relatively new, but they're also relatively famous. As Freem Brewing, I think, got the beer of the year last year from Willamette Week.
Wow,
I think.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't think
so
I've had one of their brews that I didn't like.
If you ever get out into Hood River,
their
establishment is fantastic.
It is, right on the water down there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And as I understand, Hood River does not have an open bottle ordinance.
No kidding.
So I've never tested this theory, but in theory, you could go to Hood River, buy some beer,
town.
And just walk around. So someday I'm going to do that.
Should I read the description of this beer here?
Yeah. If you'd like to.
Let's do that. It says the Flanders-style red ale may come in a bottle, but this delightfully sour ale with a hint of Pinot will quickly remind you that it has spent most of its life in an oak barrel. And it says it's barrel-aged 18 months.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Those barrels like lend it a good flavor.
Yeah, nice and balanced. Highly recommended.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about this cycle team.
Sure.
I'm going to have to look back at my notes to remember how to pronounce it.
Yep.
Komorabi is the...
Got it.
Yeah, and it means something in particular.
Yep, it's a Japanese word that is used to describe light shining through the leaves of trees.
Ah.
Yes, so it's like those light rays that you see that... and we get a lot of it here in the Pacific Northwest, right? With our giant trees. And I guess if you're on the west side of the Cascades, Komorabi is a little harder to find on the east side. Just like scrubby little junipers and stuff.
You'll find Komorabi like under the sage bush.
Yeah, exactly. If you look hard enough, you'll find it down there. But it's it's just a phenomenon that always strikes me. It makes me feel very, very relaxed. And it makes me want to spend more time in the woods and invite my friends to join me out there. So that's what the cycling team is all about, is just trying to get more ladies comfortable taking their bikes off-road.
Yeah. I was just telling Aaron, and you said earlier, it's not necessarily fat bikes, but these are bigger tires than your typical cycling team.
Well, sure. It's kind of similar to a mountain bike style.
Okay.
We're riding on bikes that we worked with Breadwinner Cycles, a couple of local frame builders here in town, to work this model out. And it's a fully rigid 29er. It can also be made in with 650B wheels for shorter stature folks. And it rides like a total tank, but it's still it's very frisky too, and it's super fun descending on rocky terrain. And I'm saying this as a mountain. I'm a pretty
you can say you're pretty badass mountain biker.
I'm a total badass mountain biker. So I have a full suspension Giuliana Rubion that I love to rip around on too. And the suspension makes it super easy to trust the bike.
Yeah.
So going out there on this fully rigid bike, I was like, okay, this is going to handle a little differently. But man, those Breadwinner guys, they built an outstanding, outstanding bike. It handles so well. And even when it's fully loaded, because we carry all of our gear with us, right? We have frame bags and seat bags and handlebar bags. Revelate Designs is our sponsor for all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And even when fully loaded, the bike handles really, really, really comfortably.
Oh, nice.
So it's super fun.
It's, what is it? Laterally stiff yet vertically compliant.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Excellent.
That's the one.
Are you guys doing multi-day, like multi-night type trips?
Yeah, we'll mix it up through the season. This first trip that we went on 2 weeks ago was just a two-day trip. It was through the Thai Valley. We rode through the White River Wilderness area.
Oh, my goodness. I love that area.
It was fantastic. Yeah, it was a 45-mile loop. We camped at about mile 22 right off the 15-mile creek.
So that's up towards Mount Hood from Thai Valley?
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure what our elevation profile, like our gain loss was overall. There was definitely some climbing in there. But it was relatively short. It was 20-mile days each.
Yeah.
So a good introduction. And it's still... You know, you're not that far from Portland. It was a two-hour drive to get out there, and it felt very remote. I think we saw five people on Saturday. two hunters that were out there looking for turkeys, and they warned us that they had seen a cougar in the area.
Ah.
So yeah, it was a very exciting trip. We did not see a cougar.
Okay. Did you see any other wildlife?
We saw some deer.
Okay.
Lots of birds.
I feel like deer is like the free space in the middle of the bingo card for going outdoors. Yeah. Like, I saw a deer. I remember I would point them out, and Adele, when we're out like bike touring, she'd be like, big deal. Who cares? Oh, did you see it? It was a deer. No, I don't care. But yeah.
Yeah. Not much other than that. But we found a secret waterfall. That was cool.
Now, this is something to talk about. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So where is it?
It's in the White River Wilderness area.
Because there's White River Falls, which is like the big famous one, and that's east of the Tai Valley area out there in eastern Oregon. That is notable and beautiful, but this is a secret one.
I mean, it's secret in so much that it's off the beaten path, but just enough that if you're riding by it and not paying attention, you won't notice that it's there. You really kind of – I mean, we got the heads up that there was something in the area, and so you just perk up your ears and – they're easy enough to hear if you listen hard enough. So we scrambled down, and it was surprisingly warm. I mean, this was 2 weeks ago, so early May, and we're splashing around, swimming around in a little pool area right above the waterfall. It's pretty magic.
Yeah.
And then we crawled back up the hill to our bikes, and loaded up and started to pedal again, and nearly ran over a rattlesnake. And I hadn't even considered that was going to. Oh, so that was another animal. Yes. I guess. I hadn't even considered that rattlesnakes might be an issue as we were like scrambling through this field to get down to the waterfall. So
yeah,
thank goodness we saw it when and how we did, and not in any other way. So, yeah. But that keeps it exciting.
Totally. Did you have a snake bite kit with you?
There's a few people on the team that have a pretty experienced first aid.
Cool.
CPR and first aid. That's something that before I go into the woods, it's like you got to know how to take care of yourself and your friends.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I've never carried snake bite kit anywhere. Have you?
Not a snake bite kit.
Okay.
Now I feel like I got to go out and
Eastern
get one.
Oregon.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing to have in your pack just in case.
But Aaron, you seem like the kind of guy that's going to have like some sort of specialized.
You just cut open the wounds and suck out the poison, right? Two X's on each fang mark, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Little known, Aaron Flores is actually kind of a rattlesnake werewolf sort of thing. He knows how to address the issues.
On a full moon, I get a little rattle in my tail.
I thought that was a viable, preventative measure when somebody has bitten by a snake, but apparently that doesn't work at all.
It doesn't work at all.
Neither does peeing on somebody when they've been stung by a jellyfish.
No.
It doesn't work either.
But
it doesn't,
right?
But it's hilarious, and it's great to convince your friend to pee on them. No, I'm just kidding. I've never done this.
Hi, Jinx.
I knew all along.
What are the experiences like? What are people saying when they come back from? You said you've just done the one tour so far. Okay. This is a young team.
Young as far as the writers or young
or just
as far as
the first trip you've taken
out? That's true.
Yeah.
So we have a pretty good mix of ladies. There's six of us on the team ranging in experience, riding for many decades to being on the bike for five years or so. The most surprising thing for me was two of our ladies don't have too much off-road riding experience. In fact, one of them had never ridden a bike off-road before.
Yeah.
Ooh. And I immediately... thrust her into a fairly advanced riding environment, which was not something that I had considered previous to going out because I'm so comfortable riding off-road that it was a good reminder that when I'm taking people on these trips, just ask for comfort level and to get a better idea of where to go. But I'm so proud of both Hazel and Caitlin did an awesome job taking advice and very, very quickly learning to trust themselves and their bikes, because that's kind of what it's all about. You want to be safe and you know your limits, but in order to become a better rider, you have to challenge yourself a little bit. You have to push yourself in something that looks scary. You can still ride through if you just let go of those, some of that fear.
Yeah.
And give it a shot and build up your confidence. And the next rock garden you come to, you're more adept to handle it. And it was really impressive to see how quickly they took to off-road riding.
That's very cool.
That's my goal, is try to get more ladies out there. It's such a valuable experience. And it's just as stressful as a rock garden could can be when you're first learning how to ride. It's way less stressful than riding on a city street.
Yeah. So a rock garden, is it what it sounds like?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Depending, you know, and it's anywhere from like gravel, thick gravel, thin gravel to like baby heads, which sound like what they are, like baby head sized rocks, goat head sized rocks.
Yeah.
And speed is your friend, mm-hmm. which sounds maybe a little counterintuitive, but
yeah.
physics really helps you. And those, and like, again, the bikes, they just handled so well. And having large tires, the 29 tires, which is equivalent to a 700C tire, standard road size tire, those things
just a bit of a wider profile on the
29s. Yeah, and the width of the tire being a little wider allows more air pressure in there, and you can play with that to kind of be partial suspension system.
Sure.
Right.
So you can really dial in a pretty cozy ride, even if you're riding over lots of rocks.
Our friend Tim Mooney at the Pedal Shift Project, pedalshift.net, he just talked a little bit about tires and touring.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an endlessly evolving conversation.
So much grist for the mill.
Yes.
But yeah, the speed thing, I was impressed by that actually, because Adele and I have done limited touring when we go out for tours in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And invariably we will take a couple of roads mm-hmm. that are not like city street roads.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm running like 32 inch tires.
32.
Yeah. 32 centimeters. They're usually inflated about as hard as they'll get. So that's not necessarily the best way to get through stuff.
For gravel. No.
Yeah.
And it's not helping your efficiency either.
No. So, but I do remember the speed thing, like, you know, basically you choose an angle, commit, and just kind of like carve through this pool of gravel that you find, right?
Yeah. The other helpful hints are stand up, unweight yourself from the bike so that you can move easily over it. When you're sitting on your bike, every bump that you take, you feel it just reverberates through your entire body. But when you're standing up and you're using your legs as shock absorbers, it makes for a much more comfortable ride.
You get a more stationary center of gravity that way. Like if you're on the saddle, your center of gravity is going to go up and down mm-hmm. quite significantly as
exactly.
the saddle bumps you off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a chicken's head.
A little bit.
Yeah. Have you ever seen that where you pick up a chicken? Roosters particularly, and they have like they move their necks independently of their bodies.
Have
and
you
so like,
have you talked about this on a previous podcast?
Maybe so.
I heard you talk.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. This is old ground then, but it's super funny.
It is hilarious.
It is. Yeah.
You can twist a chicken all different ways, and the head just stays in the same place. But yes, why were we talking about that? Oh, standing up in the pedals.
Center of gravity.
Yes, okay, gotcha. Pedals, yeah.
Making it comfortable to go over. And yeah, it works just as well on very technical terrain as it does on a city street that's ridden with potholes.
Right.
And you just kind of like stand up a little bit, allow your legs to work as shock absorbers, and just float over them.
Yeah.
It takes a little getting used to, but I promise that's how it works.
I'm
also
curious.
Also, don't get a flat.
Yeah. Speaking of flats, do you have any like hairy stories? Not necessarily like a terrible time, but like things where you weren't quite sure if you were going to pull through or
on a off-road ride.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely had some tough rides. They don't necessarily get easier, but they get faster and they get more fun the more experienced you get. But early on, so I started mountain biking when I was living in Boston.
Oh, really?
Yep. And it's a much different riding environment out there. Much more punchy climbs and very short descents and much more rocky and rooting. It's not a welcoming environment at all for a learning rider.
Yeah.
And I really kind of found myself as a mountain biker when I moved out here and had the chance to experience flow trail, and flow trails are less technical, and it allows you an opportunity to get comfortable with speed because you're not worried about like slamming over rocks. You're just kind of flowing along this ribbon of single track, and it's beautiful. It's very, very nice. But the rockier technical terrain is also super fun. When I was first learning, there were days when, you know, you want to just pick up your bike and toss it over the side of the cliff.
I've had it with this.
Yeah. And even, I think my last, like, really, I'm trying to think of the last ride that I had like a bad time, but I can because I love riding bikes.
Okay. Well, this speaks very well for the pastime.
Yeah. I mean, I'm taking vacation this week and I'm riding 360 miles across the state. Like, that's what I want to do with my free time. So.
Congratulations on that vacation.
Thanks.
So if you see our audio recorder, make sure you say something into it.
I will, for sure. I can't wait to like slap a steak on that grill
or
something like midway through and boost up my calories for that day.
This Oregon Outback coming up, what are you anticipating? Have you done it before?
I haven't.
Okay.
Last year I was recovering from an ACL replacement surgery, so I stood by while my friends had a fantastic time, and I began to plan this trip this year. We're going to do it in 5 days. I'm going to take my partner with me, who is not he doesn't have as many miles under his belt as I do, but he has a really positive attitude, and he's an
athlete.
That's
all you need.
Yeah, it's all about attitude and having just some familiarity with the concept. So we've gone out on a few little shakedown rides. So he's comfortable on his bike, and he knows how he's going to pack all of his gear. And we've found all of the potential Dairy Queen locations that we can stop at along the way.
Nice,
so I'm bribing him with whiskey and blizzards. That's what's going to get us through this trip. So
that could get you through anything.
Exactly.
I would think. Yeah. Yeah.
So
they say it goes through the Alvord Desert. Is that right?
No.
No.
That's farther east.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
I think maybe the journalism I was reading, maybe they had misquoted which desert it was.
Potentially.
It goes through some desert, though.
It goes through a lot of high desert.
Yeah.
Yeah. There aren't any, like super sandy, no vegetation stretches.
Right.
So Donnie and...
Donnie Kolb,
who put together
the Oregon Outback route.
Yeah, Velodirt, a.k.a. Oregon Bikepacking.
Is it .com? Velodirt.com?
I don't know, but
Google it.
But people
Velodirt.
Should go to OregonBikepacking.com. That's his newest venture.
Say that again.
OregonBikepacking.com.
Yeah, go there.
Go there.
You want to be there. You want to know what is at OregonBikepacking.com.
All the best.
Yeah.
They just recently were trying to find a new route in that neck of the woods, which is far southeast Oregon.
It's way out there.
Near the Steens Mountain. Yeah, super remote. Very, very dry. So you really have to be mindful about how you're going to be hydrating yourself.
Right. So there is a stretch on the Oregon Outback where water access will be less available.
Yeah, I think the longest stretch without irrigation chemical-free water is like 70 miles.
So water everywhere but not a drop to drink then?
Again, I've never ridden it.
Okay.
But as I understand it, that's his notes suggest that there is a stretch where even filtering water is probably not the healthiest.
Not a good idea.
Yeah. So, but 70 miles. If you're conservative and you don't have to like stop in camp and like use a whole bunch of water to make dinner and then plan on using a whole bunch of water to make breakfast the next day, you'll make it. Through.
You can do it.
Yeah.
Just push through in one day and just kind of get it over with then.
Yeah, exactly. It's really important. And Donnie's done all the hard work for us, like going out there and vetting these routes, noting where water is accessible. Not every water source is accessible because we pass a lot of rivers and stuff, and you can always pull from there.
That is very cool.
Yeah, yeah, it makes it so much more comfortable.
Are you bringing filtration or some other sort of purification?
Yep, I'll have a gravity-fed filtration system from Platypus.
Ooh.
Super, super easy. Just fill up a bladder, hang it on a tree, and the water trickles down through the filter very quickly, too. So,
oh, there we go.
I've spent many years sitting by the edge of a creek, like hand-pumping water.
Uh-huh.
I kind of value those moments because it's nice and quiet. You're by the water. You're in the wild. It's really
something
nice. But when you're ready
meditative
for
meditative about it.
Yeah. But when you just need, you're like in the end of the day and you're just ready to boil your ramen noodles to cook, you're like, I need water right now.
Give me some damn water
right now.
I am thirsty.
It's kind of what I like about the iodine tablets is like you could fill your bottle, throw the tablet in and you get going and, half
so
hour or whatever,
options.
You can take your break and drink water.
Yep.
Take some pre-planning, that's for sure.
It does. Yeah, you don't want to venture out on any 360-mile ride without taking a look at where you're going.
I've made that mistake before. Well, this sounds like a great time, so good luck to you.
I appreciate that.
Do you want to give us a quick rundown on the other things that you do? Maybe describe your role with KBOO Bike Show and then tell us about PDW.
Oh, sure. Okay, so on KBOO Bike Show, I'm a co-host. along with Tori Bortman and Alon Robb. We're actually hunting for another co-host, so if there's anyone out there in the ether that is interested in working with us on the KBOO Bike Show.
Gotta put the call out there.
Yeah. The show is on once monthly. It's the first Wednesday of every month. Starts at 11 o'clock. And all of our podcasts are up on some website.
Portland Transport.
Thank you.
Generously donated by Chris Smith.
Yes. Oh. Thanks, Chris. We have a lot of fun. My last show, I had the opportunity to interview director of the Bureau of Transportation here in Portland, Leah Treat. And we talked about Vision Zero, which is a really valuable conversation to be having. That was super cool.
Seems more relevant the last couple weeks.
Oh, it's always hyper relevant. Yeah. I mean, because there's not a day goes by that somebody's not injured on our roadways, and it's just totally unacceptable to just need to go out and run an errand and
have to fear for your life.
Yeah, risk being maimed. Yeah. So, and I guess, I mean, while we're talking about this, we should send well wishes to All-Star.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the guy whose leg was severed in the accident the other week.
Yep. So get well soon, buddy.
Definitely.
Can't wait to see you back on a bike.
Yeah. And I mean, there was that GoFundMe page that somebody had put up to help collect papers, medical bills, and that sort of thing.
I think a coworker from the bike gallery did that.
Yeah. They were able to raise quite a bit to approximate kind of what his needs would be. He obviously wasn't planning for this to happen. Mm-hmm. So it was great to see the outpouring of support.
It was. Such a great community here in Portland. It's
and really I would hope that, I mean, the hardest thing, obviously, like, the injury is terrible, but the time off the bike and the time away from stuff he loves, that's going to be tough. So wish him the best as he kind of waits for that to pass by as well.
Yeah. Stay strong. Keep working back toward it.
Definitely.
It's going to be good.
Better times are ahead.
Yep. Let's see what else. Oh, you mentioned Portland Design Works. That is, that's my employer.
Yeah. Sexy design. Great products.
Yeah. Thank you very much. We are a design company. You know, we're making bike accessories, but the design part of it is what we really enjoy focusing in on and making sure that, you know, it's that it's affordable, but it still looks really good. Aesthetics is something that we take a lot of pride in. Rebuildability. So when something goes wrong, you can send it back to us. All of our products have a lifetime warranty. We love, you know, developing a long-term relationship with folks that are using our stuff. So if something goes wrong, you can just be in touch with us. We're a small company. There's only five of us. My coworker Matt just had a baby. Can I welcome Vivian to the world?
Congratulations.
You're going to be such an awesome little cyclist. it's a great company to work for. I've been there for about a year now, a little over a year.
Oh, cool.
And, yeah, we got some fun things on the horizon. Here's a sneak peek, and I can only say this because we're like now 12 hours away, but we're launching a Kickstarter campaign tomorrow.
Ooh.
Yes. Ooh. You're the first people to know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So by the time this releases, there's a Kickstarter
will be
open
live
right now.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And so check out Portland Design Works Kickstarter campaign for the Fat Stevens Fat Bike Pump. It's a fat bike specific portable pump. The first of its kind on the market.
Yeah.
We're really excited about it.
That's very cool.
Yeah, thank you.
So what's different about a fat bike pump as opposed to
you're going to need to push more air.
Yeah, it has a very wide diameter barrel.
Okay.
So it basically means that you can fill up your tire, your fat bike tire in about half the strokes that it takes with a standard mountain bike mini pump.
Moving more air.
Exactly. More air, fewer strokes.
Very cool.
So you can get back on your bike, which is really important because fat bikes are allowing us to ride terrain that's more and more remote. You can really get out there on a fat bike. You really need to be hauling some dependable gear to help you out when walking out isn't really an option or it's a really long option. So
it took me 30 days.
Yeah, not okay. So, what we're hoping to do with our Kickstarter campaign is just defray half of the cost for the tooling of the pump and confirm that there is a market demand for a fat bike specific pump.
So here, tell people how they can find this Kickstarter campaign.
Well, I'm not sure what the link is going to be yet because we haven't launched it. But go to ridepdw.com and we'll have some information on directing you to our Kickstarter campaign for the Fat Stevens Fat Bike Pump.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Yeah. My boss is going to be stoked that I made it on.
Kind of exciting. Well, my experience with PDW has been that I got one of their lights a long time ago. I think just kind of by chance and by dint of the fact that I saw it on the shelf and I was like, this is prettier than the other stuff that's available.
Yeah, thanks.
And so I tried this out. It was the first version, I think, of the tail light.
Mm-hmm.
It might even be in a model that's no longer around. But
the Radbot?
It was something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I had problems with it the first time around, and it might have been like the first iteration or whatever. But I brought it in and said, hey, having a hard time making this thing go. Can you help me? And they mm-hmm. said, no problem. Swapped yep. it right out, gave me a new one. It was super cool.
Yeah, so, and it's just yeah. as valuable for us to receive that feedback, because we take that and we improve our products so that, you know, that same issue isn't reoccurring.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So it's super, super important.
And to that point, I suppose, I never had the same problem with the next Ta-da. Light that I was given. So, yeah. The only reason I don't have the PDW tail right now is that mm-hmm. I have taken it everywhere for like 5 or 6 years, and yep. I finally lost it on like tour last year, or something like that. So,
well, we have quite a few for you to choose from now.
Yeah.
Kind of like mixed up. I have to give my favorite is the Fender Bot. It requires yeah. a little DIY, but you attach it directly to your fender.
Ah, so this is the headlight or the taillight?
This is the taillight.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But it's great because you don't have to worry about it getting jacked off your bike if you have to run into the store for a quick second, because it's sure. screwed into your fender. So
okay.
it's on there.
A permanent installation.
Yeah. Well, so until you take off your wheel and unscrew it. But
more permanent than other
certainly
other
more permanent than a lot that you just like. Oh, we've also redesigned our mounting system. So now we're using UV-proof rubber straps, which make on-off super simple.
And far more, you could put it on a greater variety of bicycles,
absolutely.
I'm sure.
Yep.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I still need to outfit the tall with a couple more lights.
There you go.
And I need a separate light set for my tandem bike.
You got just so many bikes.
I've got too many bikes.
Did you just
garage.
Invite me on here to try to persuade some samples? Some
marketing? Why, yes. Yes, I, no, actually, I didn't. No, this just came up organically, folks.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, no consideration was taken for the interview that you heard.
That's
yes.
true.
So anyways, I'm looking forward to it. No, I would gladly support PDW because
awesome.
they're fantastic. So.
Thanks.
Well, we should do some news.
I think we should.
All right. Do we need a break or anything, or should we just roll right into
it? Let's roll right in.
All right.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight. Pedal just as fast as we can into the night light.
Hey, what?
All right, straight up.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
No, tell me, what's going
did
on?
Did we mention the river signal?
No, not yet. Okay. That's why I bolded it on the Google Docs.
Yeah.
First in the news, the river signal
yeah.
just launched. And they're also, it's a partner show on KBOO, actually, the Portland radio station.
That's right.
They are a live, somewhat reality-informed, fictionalized, dramatized show. There's a lot of words. What I mean is it's three guys that are going to take a trip down the Mississippi River in a paddle wheel boat.
And I'm not sure if this was mentioned on the Brian Benson episode or not, but we've certainly talked about it since then.
Yes.
And
I think
he's one of the three that's behind this.
Mm-hmm. He's one of the very first. And if you check our podcast feed, you may have already heard the episode that we talk about him living on a boat. And we included some audio from this live performance that I went to on Saturday, where they did a performance of their first one from the bow of this boat.
Yeah.
Which they had hauled out of the water, put onto a trailer in preparation for transport. And so cool guys.
Yeah. All right. So from the Oregonian, Portland's worst street for bike car crashes.
Which one could it be?
Could it be?
Is?
Southeast Division. The very street that
really?
That we are on right now.
The one I'm looking at right
the
now.
The one you are looking at right now. The one I ride at least once a week.
Every goddamn day.
Certainly. I was going to say, like, certainly 5 times a week.
Yeah. Okay. So, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Data provided by the Oregon Department of Transportation's Crash Analysis and Reporting Unit show that 6 of the city's 10 most dangerous roads for bicyclists are in Southeast Portland. During the five-year period, Southeast Division Street had the most bicycle car crashes at 59.
59?
Yeah.
That's a lot. And those are the reported ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to the ones that...
I mean, that's like almost 12 a year in this five-year period.
Yeah.
Yeah. So followed by Northeast Broadway at 49, Southeast Hawthorne at 42, Southeast Boulevard with 37, or Southeast, sorry, Powell.
We just call it Boulevard. There is no way.
Boulevard. East Burnside Street, 35. Northwest Broadway, 31. Southeast Stark Street, 30. Southwest Capitol Highway, 28. Southeast Holgate, 27. And Southeast Foster, 26. That surprised me that Foster was not higher.
Foster is lowest on that list. That's the one that I ride that one every day. So I guess, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's one of the ones I avoid riding. And I'm riding Division.
Right.
Who'd have thought?
I feel like you and I have switched a couple of positions over the past couple of years where I think you used to be like the dangerous, like, do everything, fuck everybody, I'm on the road. And now I think I at least like me doing Foster, that's something that's characteristically out of sorts for me.
Yeah, yeah. And turns out, like, even though maybe in our heads we've switched roles, turns out practically our roles have stayed the same.
Yes. Yes, they have. I've just risen to your level. You were always up here as far as daring and daring too.
Well, there's a fine line between bravery and foolishness, and I'd like to think I ride that line.
Yes, yes. You want to be as close to the center of that line
as
possible.
Right. There is something pretty interesting in this article that I want to touch on here. Dylan Rivera, a spokesman for PBOT, says, like, these are typical, or this data is pretty typical for what they see. This quote, if you focus on fatalities and serious injuries, you quickly end up focusing on the arterial streets rather than highways, he says. That's oftentimes because they're designed for maybe faster speeds, but have more of an urban use. And there's something very interesting in that quote that I'm not sure he was aware of what he said.
Subliminally,
or
perhaps.
What that implies in what he just said. In that, so that we have a high speed area that's designed for slower speed traffic. Or, no, sorry, we have slower speed uses, like, you know, shops on Division, for example.
Sure.
But we have traffic and a design of a road that is, like, highway driven or that is made for higher speeds.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. At some point, those ice cream lines are going to spill out onto the street, and then you're going to have problems.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, me, Mr. Simplicity, my thought is, like, well, why don't we just reduce the speed limit?
That would be the easiest fix, it seems. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a cornerstone of the Vision Zero policy.
Right.
Speed kills.
Right.
Everybody, regardless
Of
your mode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've asserted that many times over. It's not what you ride. It's not how you ride. It's not even like what you're doing while you're riding, although, you know, distracted driving or riding is very dangerous. It's the rate of speed at which you are doing these things. Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to sully my anecdote earlier about the bike sound system ride with weird anecdotes, but we were crossing Southeast Powell Boulevard at 72nd, I want to say, and big old pickup truck speeding eastbound either didn't see the light or didn't care. We were beginning to cross because we had a green light.
Yeah.
And the sucker just like...
Just barreled through?
Barreled right through this red light.
Wow.
Yeah. We were all heading out right into its path. Super scary.
So that could have been like, like multiple injuries.
And then later that night, we were also going back down 72nd Avenue, like at midnight or something like that. We're on our way back to the bar for one last round. And there was a high-speed police chase. So there was a pickup truck burning rubber at like 60 miles an hour down 72nd Avenue. And then like eight cop cars in pursuit. So
look, these never work. High-speed chases have always, always endangered the people around the chases. They've rarely ever like had good endings.
It was a scary situation. I didn't feel safe at the time.
High speed chases really get under my skin because honestly, all it is, it's this Roadrunner coyote game going on. And it's the thrill of the chase. Honestly, they don't work.
Hmm.
There are better ways to catch whoever it is that's running away, but, people get caught up in this whole adrenaline rush of chasing after the bad guy, and they want to have that sort of Dukes of Hazzard moment where they catch the bad guy or whatever.
Well, it's an interesting perspective. Well, let's not put all the fault on the police.
Well, yeah, I'm not. I'm certainly not. But I'm saying there's so much better ways and way less dangerous ways to catch whoever it is that is needing to be caught at that moment.
Yeah, that's it was a strange atmosphere on the roads. It has been a strange atmosphere on the roads for some time now, I think. I thought I noticed crazy on the streets like a month back or more.
And this has been a like long duration.
It just seems to have continued to escalate. Like I don't know that maybe we've reached some sort of point where crazy on the streets is just going to keep on getting more.
Crazy is the new normal.
So be careful out there, people. That's the thing. Like we're not going to blame any victims. We're not going to blame any sort of like we're not pointing fingers in any one direction. Just be careful, you know, and be nice.
Let's point fingers at the agencies that dictate.
That's right.
The spaces, right?
Yes.
It's their job.
Yes. Just talk to the regulators.
Write a letter. Mm-hmm. Strongly worded.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is, like I was talking about riding on Foster, or you riding on Division?
Yeah.
Or like Nathan Jones says, bikes in the street every damn day.
Every damn day.
I'm a fan of that. It's my new favorite quotation.
Yeah.
It's like you normalize the presence of people on bikes or people on foot or like anyone who's not in a damn car. That's going to help. There can be a cultural shift, but people have to come out and make it happen. So
yeah, and it doesn't necessarily have to be as contentious as I make it.
Yeah, we're soapboxing tonight. I don't know if
you guys are. No, and I'm holding back. speaking of Division,
yes.
Powell, this whole area, I think it'll be really interesting to see how the high speed transit line that they've that they're talking about, how that'll affect this neighborhood. I think it'll have a and once the bridge opens up,
right?
There'll be so many more.
You talked about the new Orange Line, Max.
I am. Mm.
And Tillicum Bridge.
Yep, I'll have an opportunity to ride next month too.
Oh, really?
Exciting. Yeah,
nice.
As a member of the Bicycle Advisory Committee.
Oh, yeah.
Get an early shot at checking that out. Yeah.
Do you want to borrow a digital recorder and take it with you?
Maybe.
All right. We'll talk later.
Cool.
Hey, speaking of the Orange Line.
Hey, what else? Is there anything else we should know about this Orange Line?
From Portland Transport, TriMet Orange Line first ride interviews. Portland Transport was invited, along with other local media, to cover Friday morning's TriMet Orange Line first ride press event. Topics addressed were the role of the city, state, and federal government in transit funding, the current political climate, what transit lines will use the bridge, what will be done with funds now that the project is under budget, the transfer situation in Milwaukee, the new fare system, and others. And there is a video that I've linked to that, which on the video, it's scenes from inside the like passenger section and also like inside the driver's section.
Oh, nice.
Of the new Max.
Beautiful.
Cars. Yeah.
You know, there was a time-lapse video that I saw of the new line.
Oh,
and being a train geek like I am, it was kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Because they just kind of, it was watching the length of the train from downtown all the way down to the end of the line in Milwaukee, where it's going to be when it opens. And it's like in the space of a minute or something like that.
Ooh.
That's cool. Have you seen the drone footage?
No. Is there drone footage?
Yeah. Kenji Sugihara.
Of what?
He is the executive director of OBRA, amongst other things.
Okay.
He's also, with
the Oregon Bicycle Racing Association.
Yeah, you got it. He also has a few drones.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's kind of a hobby passion of his.
So not footage of drones, but footage from drones.
From his drone flying over the bridge.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really cool to get that perspective, like looking straight down on it and stuff. Really
neat. I just realized I'm out of time. I'm almost out of time to like go out and trespass on that bridge before.
That's right.
Not saying I would do that. I wouldn't recommend that.
Soon it would be legal and therefore not fun.
Boring.
Yeah. I'm not saying anyone should break the law. Just observing that soon it will be legally open. So
what we're saying is, guys, it's so exciting. It's going to be open to the public.
Soon everyone can go out there on that bridge. Yeah. I feel like I mentioned every time the bridge comes up, but they missed their opportunity to pave the sidewalk, the bicycle sidewalk, with grooves.
Yeah.
So that your tires would play Feeling Groovy by Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, man.
That was not in the funding.
No. But they're under budget.
Under budget.
There we go.
You know what? If we found
Let's
out.
Let's write a letter. Hey, we know what to do with your extra
now
money.
Now you can bring that song back. You know, we could again, not recommending anybody do this, but if you found out like what that waveform was.
Yeah.
People have been known to go out and groove concrete
sidewalks.
Themselves with crowbars or whatever. Don't do this. This is a bad idea.
People have been known to prune trees at night on their own as well.
That's right. At night pruning. You know, Twitterless Andy was out on the bike ride, the stereo ride.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he said it was the first one he'd done in a while. It was cool to see him out. Yeah.
Oh, good.
But no longer Twitterless, by the way. He's actually on Twitter now, so, yeah.
The Andy formerly known as Twitterless.
Right, right. I don't know what he is now.
I guess he's just Andy.
Yeah. Hey, you know what else it's time for?
Hey, what time is it? Oh, snap. You got me again. I really didn't think it was.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You didn't know what I was going to say?
No.
Okay. Johnny K found Legos plus bicycles. And this was on CopenhagenEyes.com. And there were some excellent constructions of Legos with bicycles. Little Lego people.
I'm going to have to look at this later.
Yeah, it's, you should open it up. Have a look. I'll keep on reading. Sisvail, Brian Sisvail from, is he from the Dropout Bike Club or is he from multiple things? I forget.
We'll say he's from the multiple things.
He's been around for a while. Yeah, I forget who's part of what club. I believe in response to our boat month, hashtag boat month, he says, "What we like bikes and build big floats for the last 2 years." And there's a link to a Facebook photo album. Apparently they've gone out and done some big old floats on the river. So I would like to do this someday. If somebody's doing this again, I would like to be invited. I'm a big fan. Yeah. And then Ed, I believe this is Ed in Phoenix, but it could be another Ed. Let's see. Executivestyle.com.au. Why quaxing is trending globally with cyclists. And there's a politician with the lax name of Quax who likes to portage his groceries and things using a bicycle.
Oh, yeah. Somewhere out in Australia, right?
Yes. This terminology apparently is spreading somewhat virally.
Which is, I don't know, like, it's kind of cool that it's becoming a thing and people are it's getting attention.
Right.
Like, hey, yeah, you can use a bike for carrying stuff.
Yeah. I've been quaxing for years.
But yeah, exactly. It's something that is
quaxing
sort of.
Quaxing before quaxing was cool.
Yeah.
That's what I always call
it. Oh, shit. Yeah. We're the hipsters of quaxing.
We are, apparently.
Quaxers?
Quaxters.
But I do like that this is a thing that was, it's something that's gaining traction. People are going out, they're carrying kids, they're carrying bikes, they're towing trailers and things.
Yeah,
taking their pets out for walks,
and getting toilet
different
paper.
Different types of pets.
Maybe.
Yeah,
iguanas.
Rabbits.
Oh,
let's do it. Definitely.
This is back to that Jurassic Park conversation we had, where you're talking about furry things, and I'm talking about about lizards. Well, hey, this is kind of the end of our show. We should probably wrap this up. Is there anything else you wanted to mention while you're here?
Oh, what else do, that's, we covered a lot.
We did.
Yeah.
We did.
This was excellent. I really appreciate the invite.
Well, thank you for coming. We'd like to have you back.
With you guys. Please, anytime.
Because you're going to have more adventures and we're going to want to hear about them.
Yeah.
We didn't even ask you about mountain bike access in the city.
No.
We don't have time to ask you that question now.
Yeah.
But let's talk about that later sometime.
Okay.
Excellent.
Like when Gateway Green is built and there is
actual legitimate access in town. Boom. Yeah. And all of
times.
There's so much other stuff happening. Yeah. We can't get into it now.
Well, real quickly.
Yes.
Since you brought it up, my thanks to our mayor for putting in some one-time budget allowances for the off-road master plan and for a Gateway Green match as well.
Oh, good.
That's not finalized yet, but that is in his recommended budget. And
nice.
If any city commissioners are listening to this, I would appreciate your vote on those two topics. It would be great.
All right. Yes. Get on that, people.
Yeah.
Mr. Flores, anything else from you? Last thoughts?
No.
Okay.
No. I think I've covered everything.
All right. I am thinking about doing an overnight ride. Did I tell you this already?
No.
Have I talked about this on the air?
No.
I think, what is it? The 11th of June is when work is over for me. And the 12th of June is when my sister is graduating from her master's program
In
Tacoma.
You're going to ride all the way to Tacoma?
I think I'm going to ride from Portland to Tacoma. I'm going to try and do it overnight. Because I've done, two or three centuries now?
Yeah.
And they seem like they get progressively easier. And so I think I'd like to do more.
So you're going to do a double century?
Nah, it's
overnight?
Like 160.
That's,
or something like that. And there's a bunch of buses up there if I get tired later on.
Okay.
I mean, I will get tired. But so if anybody has any overnight riding tips, I'm super curious. Number one, have great lights.
Yeah.
What was the website again?
RidePDW.com.
That's right. Yeah. All right. All right. Hey, let's wrap this show up.
Sure.
Jocelyn, thank you again for coming in.
Really appreciate it. Thanks, guys. Super fun.
Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Write to us, email at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text 250-384-7974.
Twitter at Sprocket Podcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Hurtbird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K., Shadowfoot,
Katharina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lean, Richard Wazinski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen-Miller,
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez, and all the rest of our fabulous donors.
Thank you so much.
That's
brush
right.
Your teeth.
Go to bed. Really, go to bed.
Listening to Open Roads Broadcasting. Did I get the name right?